This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
How many discounts does USAA auto insurance offer? Too many to say here. Multi-vehicle discount, safe driver discount, new vehicle discount, storage discount, legacy.
How many discounts will you stack up? Tap the banner or visit usaa.com/auto discounts. Restrictions apply.
Ugh. You said you were over him, but his hoodie is still in your rotation. It's time. Grab your phone, snap a few pics, and sell it on Depop. Listed in minutes, with no selling fees. And just like that, a guy 500 miles away just paid full price for your closure. And right on cue.
Hey, still got my hoodie?
Nope, but I've got tonight's dinner paid for. Start selling on Depop, where taste recognizes taste. List now with no selling fees. Payment processing fees and boosting fees still apply. See website for details.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Wing and Tail Boys podcast, your Northeast hunting and fishing destination. I'm Chris.
And I'm Angelo.
And we're your hosts. Join us as we navigate the woods and waters of the Northeast, sharing our passion for the outdoors.
Whether it's land management, outdoor recreation, hunting, or fishing, we're going to cover it all. With 40 plus years of experience in the Northeast, we'll provide insights, tips, and stories to help you make the most of your adventures and help you experience the wild.
So, tune in, grab your gear, and let's hit the woods together. And always remember, success is just a commitment away. What's going on, ladies and gentlemen? Thanks for joining us here for another episode of the Wing and Tail Outdoors Podcast. As I record today's intro, it is Tuesday, December 2nd, and this episode will be airing on Thursday, December 4th. Now, this episode welcomes Dorch Huang back of Fire Knock, and it's actually an episode that we recorded a few months ago, I want to say towards the end of August, and it was as we were getting into hunting season, and we sat down and had a conversation about the typical issues that you have with a crossbow. And then we sat down and recorded another episode with the same thing for compound bows. And then I think we even sat down and did an episode on the traditional style bows. So those episodes are going to be coming out here periodically as we progress through the end of the season and into the off season. Now, I would really love to have some personal hunting stories here, but unfortunately, I still haven't been in the woods. The last sit now, I think, was the last true sit was October. So I haven't really been in the woods for a month and a half. As you guys know, I've been really, really, really waiting for rifle season to come, thinking that I would be able to get out and at least get some hunting with rifle season. But unfortunately, over the Thanksgiving break, these issues that I've been having with my hands got worse once again. And I'm not even able to hold a rifle. It's really honestly just a buzzkill. And it's really put a damper on my mental, I guess you could say, not so much on a day-to-day light type of thing, but we look forward to hunting season all year. And then to get there, be able to start the season and then be sidelined for reasons unknown, really, at this point, I guess it is what it is, but I'm still holding out hope for the New Jersey winter bow, which basically runs from January 1st to, I want to say, February 15th. I just need to check the book on that to get the dates squared away. But basically, I went back to the doctor yesterday, and it's just the inflammation has gotten so bad, and we're really trying not to have to operate on it. I'm on another round of steroids. They put me on it for a longer period of time this time, since it did help last time. And I think I just need to be smart and keep it braced as much as possible and hope that I can get the inflammation down and start the recovery process and hopefully maybe be ready to go in a month, month and a half here, but time will tell. With that being said, quick recognition here. We've had a few different guys and gals. Well, for me, it's just guys, but I'm sure there's gals out there too, who have found some success over the last week. First and foremost, huge shout out to my buddy Adam Olson from up in New Hampshire. Adam has been grinding hard for the last, I want to say, 6 years, 7 years. Just started hunting. His first season hunting, I think, was the year I moved up to New Hampshire. So 2019, I think, 2019, 2020 hunting season, something like that. And Adam has put himself on deer pretty often, has seen deer, found sign, done the whole thing. But every time it comes down to the shot, something happens, whether it's a miss or a gun that goes click or forgetting to load a gun up, just all these different things have happened. And all his hard work finally came together this past weekend, where he was able to connect with a doe and put his first deer ever on the ground. So congratulations to you, buddy. And I'm really looking forward to having Adam on the show to kind of talk about the trials and the tribulations that new hunters go through today and how much help you really get from all of these different platforms and resources and how much of it really gets in the way of success. So I'm really looking forward to that episode and hope we can have him on soon. Now, if you guys think back to, I want to say early September, late August, we had Ben Polcaro on the podcast here, and we did an episode on Northeastern hunting in New Hampshire and Maine. Ben got out this past weekend and was able to double down with his dad, where they both put down some Northeastern bucks. So congratulations to you both. David Hoy, we've talked about him. He is a buddy of mine who has a land management consultant. It's a land management company down in central Pennsylvania. I believe it's called Integrated Habitat Management. If you guys are interested or in the area and you are interested in having any work done on your property, you should definitely reach out to him. However, David got out this morning and took a doe on his property with the rifle. So congratulations to you, bud. And last but not least for this week, Kevin Creeley of the Mid-Atlantic Outdoorsman has had a heck of a year. I think he said he's shot something like 6 or 7 deer between whitetail and the Sika deer that he put down in camp there. Had his first run in New York and had an opportunity at a really nice deer. And I want to say he's back out there now, but I could be wrong. But either way, congratulations to you, bud, and the success that you have had this season. Again, as always, I'm pretty sure I'm forgetting someone, but that's okay. We'll remember you for next week. Now, before we get rolling on this episode, I just want to take a quick moment to recognize our partners here for the podcast. Fire Knock, if you guys are interested in checking out any of their products, interested in arrows, pieces, parts for your bows, and accessories, anything like that, head on over to fireknock.com, see what they have going on over there. We have the Nested Tree Stand System. You guys know I've loved that system this year. We have a discount code for you. It is WT10. Use that code at checkout, save yourself 10%, and it also helps this podcast out as well. We have Vitalized Seed. We are getting to that time of year where some of us may be starting to think about those spring food plots, frost seeding, that whole nine. So head on over to vitalizedseed.com and start to plan your spring food plots today. Rack Getter Scents. Y'all know Gerard has been phenomenal to us. He's got stuff for deer, bear, turkey, fishing. If you guys are into any of those things, head on over to rackgetterscents.net. Check out what he has to offer. This year, I started using the Hunt Arsenal Cloud Infinity saddle. I've absolutely loved it. Hands down, the most comfortable harness that I've used to date in my 20 plus years of hunting. They also have, in my opinion, the best aiders on the market, and they have a couple other really cool things like collapsing climbing sticks and stuff like that. So head on over to huntarsenal.com and check out their line of products. Last but not least, if you are in the Northeastern Pennsylvania area and you are in need of an outdoors shop, you need to head over to Hunter's Gallery in Hamlin. That is where I work. You can find me behind the bow counter or the gun counter. I would love to meet you guys, shake hands, and talk shop a little bit. And last but not least, if you're a little bit more eastern or northeastern, closer to the Milford area, head on into Silver Birch, ask for Russ, let him know Chris sent you from the Wing and Tail Outdoors podcast. As you guys know, that shop was paramount in getting a bow in my hands this year and also helping me out with the last minute issue that I had and getting that the bow in and out in time to have me in the woods for opening day. Guys, that's all we got for today. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. And remember, success is just a commitment away. Without further ado, Dorch Huang. Wing and Tail Boys podcast is brought to you by Truthsticks Custom Arrows. Built with FireKnock technology, Truthsticks Custom Arrows simply fly flatter, spin faster, and improve arrow efficiency downrange. With two signature arrows for the compound bow and a signature crossbow bolt, they've got something for everyone. If you're ready to take the guesswork out of archery and take the best performing arrow into the field, then check out Truthsticks Custom Arrows at wingandtailoutdoors.com and experience the truth of arrow flight. Welcome back to the show, Dorch. How are you doing today, buddy?
I'm doing quite well. You know, hunting seasons upon us, and believe me, my phone has been literally ringing off the hook. Everybody asking the same questions, same problem.
Same questions, same solutions. I don't know about out by you, but we've had a cold front come through. We're recording this today. It's Friday, August 29th. Yesterday, when I got to work, my car read 47 degrees.
Oh,
when I left my house, it was low 40s. So we're right there, ready to go. I'm fired up. And for me, New Jersey, the early season for New Jersey opens up September 13th. So I am 2 weeks from tomorrow. I will be sitting in a tree and hopefully making something happen.
And wow. I remember about 15 years ago, I was hunting with Paul, one of my old buddies. The freaking thing rigged 79-82. It was like, ooh.
Well, that was like last year.
The only thing that draw blood is mosquitoes.
I mean, last year it was hot as balls opening the first couple weeks of the season. Same thing the year before. But the last 3 years, we had a pretty serious drought almost across the entire country. And this year we've had the opposite. So the last 3 years have been really hot, very dry. This year has been relatively cooler. We did have, you know, one or two heat waves that came through, but we've had pretty much rain consistent. We had that one stretch where it was raining just about every day for like 30 something days straight.
Yeah, and that's recently my grass go crazy. I'm thinking,
You know, so I'm very excited. The extra rain is going to help us with some things as far as, you know, cover for the deer and stuff like that. But then the high rains are also going to be detrimental in the sense of we didn't have a really good apple crop this year on the private property. There isn't the greatest, well, I shouldn't say the greatest. There are some really good acorn producing trees right now, but with all of the rain and the winds, they're dropping early. So while it's going to be nice to have a cooler start to the season, it's also coming with its own challenges.
Well, you know, just like every season, based on the condition and in where I hunt, because I hunt public land, the crops around and how the farmers react to it is going to be a big deal. Mm-hmm. And I have a feeling this year a lot of soybeans going to be in the field.
Maybe. I don't plant soybeans or corn or anything like that. But here in Pennsylvania, in the areas where I'm at, the farmers last year planted soybeans. I haven't driven past those fields in a couple months now. But I would imagine that if they planted soybeans last year, they're going to have corn in the ground this year.
Well, the reason I say a lot of soybean, because like one of my brother-in-law's kids are farmers. They are in their 30s. And they told me they're so concerned they may not sell any. So they may not even harvest it.
Wow. Hey, that means you have somewhere to go hunting this year.
No, you know, if you hunt, you know, in the way I am, there's no trees. You know where the deer are?
In the small stretches of timber?
There's no stretch of timber. It just all gets flat.
People's backyards.
There's tons of deer there.
They're probably in people's backyards.
Where at? You mentioned, just look back, it's flat.
Mm-hmm.
But there's tons of deer there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when there's a stream, they're going through field.
Sure.
Then you go like deep down, the deer's in here.
Oh, of course. They found a low spot, essentially.
Yep. And then what you do is that they would walk in the low spot. And usually what I do is that for the places I hunt like that, I hunt next to the bridges.
There you go. Hey, whatever gets the job done, right?
Hey, like the puppy land, the church I hunt down in downtown, actually 192nd Street in Hallstatt, which is U.S. Highway 1.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I shot the deers. They are next to, underneath the Highway 1, from the private area into the church and school.
Whatever works, man. That's what I'm saying. Sometimes.
But I know my buddy. I used to able to with my buddy. We able to hunt downtown near in Cook. I mean, that's part of Cook County.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, Cook County 2 years ago, at 30 deer. I got two of them.
Okay. Hey, those aren't bad numbers. Two out of 30, one out of 15. That's solid.
Hey,
that's like what, 7%.
Got a nice spot with drop time. Downtown DuPage, next to King County. That deer score used to be 240.
Really?
Yes.
You shot it?
You can't shoot there.
Okay.
I remember visiting my kids where they are in next to Woodridge. The moment you pass 9 o'clock, they come out right next to the highway and eat the grass.
I've been seeing a whole lot of turkey walking along the road lately.
Oh, turkey. Yes, yes. The turkey is big. But you know what this year, I just saw Eric, the DNL guy, he told me this year we expect double the number of last year. So we're going to have more deer than we know what to do with.
All right. Hey, that's a good problem to have.
Hey, the EHD is gone. Okay, that's a good thing.
That's positive.
With your blue tongue, that's gone.
that's positive. So I don't have as much time as we normally have today. So I ran into a problem with my bow. The string has completely stretched out beyond repair, well faster than it should have. So now I need to go to the shop. I have to see if they're going to be willing to warranty it. If not, I got to buy myself a new string. The season starts in 2 weeks. There's only one shop around me that makes their own custom strings in-house. So I have to go there. But in the spirit of the season coming up, everyone knows that there are two groups of people. There are the people who shoot their bow all year round, or if they don't shoot their bow year round, maybe they take a couple months off after season and then they start back up in like springtime and they're shooting all summer long.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the other group of people just pulled their bows out of their garage now for the first time since December. And now they're starting to find either issues with their strings or their arrows or their bow isn't on anymore, or they forgot that they needed a new dozen arrows. And this is the time of year, and this is the reason why this time of year, people like you, business owners, people like me, custom arrow makers, we are getting completely bombarded and overloaded. I'm cautious in saying from the people who didn't prepare properly, but I'll phrase it in the way of we're getting bombarded by people who are down to the wire trying to get done what they need done. So,
well, let me give it this way. I got a guy just called me yesterday. He had four hunts coming up.
When?
Four hunts.
I know, but like when's his first hunt? Like in the next couple of weeks?
I think he start now because he's in Western States.
Okay.
He need me to express his arrows, his crossbow arrows.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
His bow was in his hand less than 2 weeks ago.
What, he just bought it brand new?
Most people do. They bought a brand new bow and found out they didn't shoot the way they wanted. Mm-hmm. He's just like me, can't see shit. So he need like an axe, but they don't make it for his bow, so he called me.
Okay. And you make something for everything, basically.
Yes, yes. Except you got some weird size, like 2119, 2119, that kind of aluminum arrow, ACC 116, that kind of deal. But I just like, whoa, where do you find those?
Yeah. Hey, maybe it's something that he had just sitting in his garage and he figured he'd put them together or cut them or whatever. You know what I mean? Who knows?
Quite a few. The newer crossbow, a lot of them, they actually do not have a reliable light enough, or they just cannot make one.
Right. But I was referring more to the aluminum. Are there companies selling aluminum bolts with their crossbows?
At this moment, that's a thing. A lot of people don't understand. Aluminum have one major, major issue with the current crossbows. In the old days, aluminum are okay, but in today's world, aluminum is actually dangerous.
Is it because it bends, and once it bends, it doesn't bend back? Is that?
Yes and no. You are in the right track of mine. Most of the aluminum arrow today, pretty much everything is based on 7000 series aluminum.
Mm-hmm.
They are a lot harder than most. I will just go back to the time we talk about aluminum. The first two number is thousands of an inch on OD.
Mm-hmm.
Like 22.19 is means the OD of the shaft is 22 thousandths, 22 over 64 of an inch. Mm-hmm. And then the 19 means it's 19,000 thickness in material.
Right.
That's how you calculate what's the ID of the shaft.
Okay.
Now, when you do aluminium, it's a homogeneous material, it's aluminium. Just like everybody who knows, when you start bending hard aluminium, what does that mean? Metal fatigue will eventually kick in. The magic number is about 6 dozen.
6 dozen what? Shots?
Shots.
That's it?
That's it.
That's nothing.
But what do you think when you shoot extents and so on? The moment you went through about 70 shots of an arrow. I mean, don't take my word. I learned it from Rod White, the Olympic gold and silver medalist. Mm-hmm. He said that if you do not have your shaft good and tuned, and you need to sort of like count your shots. When you went through that many, you cannot depend on the true spine number of the shaft.
So then why even bother getting the aluminum? Well, I'm not even going to backtrack. It's important to point out that aluminum also does have benefits over carbon. Right?
Aluminum, because aluminum has a more linear... It's superbly consistent, and you have no torsion.
Right, and the spine is completely linear for the most part, from front to back. The arrows are pretty much consistent from arrow to arrow. So they do have benefits as far as consistency and dependability are concerned, but their failure rate occurs way faster.
Well, you don't call it failure rate. You just need to understand that you buy tires. You buy ultra sticky tires, you're going to buy a new set of tires in 25,000 miles.
Yes.
You buy an A rating that is all the way down to 760. Well, then you know you're good for 80,000. When you buy aluminum, you don't understand. This arrow is good for what you need. And remember, the heavier the FOC you shot, the more high the power stroke you shot, the faster it reaches metal fatigue point.
Right. And I'll go one step farther to explain why. We've talked about this before in the Aero Science series, where the higher the FOC, that means the farther forward the weight is on your arrow from the center point or the balance point. But that's besides the point. In order to obtain higher FOC, you have to have more weight towards the front of your arrow. The more weight that you have towards the front of the arrow, the more your arrow needs to work to move that weight. So what ends up happening is when the crossbow is released, or even a compound bow, this applies to both compound and crossbow, but when your arrow releases, the back of your arrow has to work harder to move the front of the arrow, which means your arrow is able to flex more before it, you know, so it flexes more until that front begins.
Yep, in other words, there's more work internally on the arrow shaft.
Exactly. And the more your arrow has to work, the more you're wearing down the usability of the spine, or I don't know if it is the spine or not, but the durability.
It's the spine, because it's the ability to resist bend.
Yep. Now, how does that compare to a carbon arrow? Same, let's say it's the same build, same length, same diameter, same outer diameter, same everything. How does a carbon shaft compare to an aluminum shaft as far as durability is concerned?
This is where everything, just remember our arrow series? The fact is that depends on how the arrow is built and what do you mean by durability. Because, you know, the construction and the design and the material of carbon, it's like it's worse than star. It's highlighting how many stars are there on the sky.
Yeah.
Because you can use, say, I use 1K, 1.5K, 4K, or those are just simply the shape of the fiber. Then I can use, say, V300, 400, 500, all the way to 10,000.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Or 1,000. Or I can say that I do a 2-layer, 3-layer, 4-layer angled, and then the resin components and so on. I mean, that's just unlimited. The fact is that that's the reason a normal carbon arrow and a really perfect carbon arrow, it's very much the same way like tires.
Mm-hmm.
You can go to some place and get a cheap tire for $40. But then you look at some Formula Racing tires. So you can't touch one for under $2,500. They're two tires. What's the difference? The performance. And the performance that you need. That's the difference.
Right.
That's the reason I told people when you just shoot crossbow, stick with the generalized arrow unless you pass the 420 feet per second. That's where things got tricky.
Yeah, which these days, most of the crossbows out on the market are hitting over 420 feet per second anyway.
And, right.
You know, little side note, I'm sure you've heard by now that the New York governor has signed the bill to basically lift all restrictions on crossbows in New York State. So New York State, I believe, does not have a weight limit anymore. It doesn't have a time width frame. Limit. Yeah, it doesn't have a width limit. They don't have a like a day, like a season restriction, which I'll be honest with you. I don't agree with that. I will be completely honest with you. For everyone, let me clarify before, I think, I believe crossbows are closer to a firearm than they are a bow and arrow. That's just my, that's my personal opinion.
Mm-hmm.
If the whole idea of bow hunting is to give a longer season to a firearm that requires, that is harder to shoot an animal with than a, than mm-hmm. a gun, for example, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the reason the bow season is so much longer than the gun season is because there are far less deer being killed with a bow than there are with a gun, at least in mm-hmm. theory, right? So now you open up the season, the entire season. Anyone can hunt with a crossbow from day one of the year until the last day of the season, right? And now you're going to have a lot more deer killed with the same bag limits that are based on regular compound bows. Now, that's only part of my issue. The other half of my issue for crossbows is, just like a gun, how many people do you know that go out and shoot their gun religiously throughout the year? Far less than bow and arrow. When you have someone that's shooting a compound bow, typically speaking, again, you still have the two fields. There's always going to be people who just pick it up and go hunt, and it is what it is, right? But I would venture to guess people that take compound bow hunting seriously are out shooting more often than they are not. My concern, and I've seen it firsthand with people I know, people I've spoken to, they have a crossbow, they take it out a week before the season, shoot it once or twice to make sure it's on, and then they go out and hunt. Not only are they not practicing with it, they're also taking farther shots that they normally wouldn't take. They're not practicing with these things. Not everybody shoots off of an arrow rest, and you're going to end up having a lot more deer wounded and not recovered because they don't understand that while the ability of the crossbow is greater, it doesn't increase your ability as a hunter. And in my opinion, it gives people an excuse to practice less and hunt more. And I think it's dangerous.
Let me tell you the whole story. I went through the whole process in my head.
Okay.
The fact is that, let me give you some stats.
Mm-hmm.
I know the superintendent out of Chavanaugh State Park, out of Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
They got what they called it, we called it the smelly area, which they dumped the inside of the toilets up there. Ew. Nobody go there because it was bad. For the last 20 years that I know of, if they, Chavanaugh usually will have about 100 to 120 deer harvested. That's about 130 deer that got wounded and died. Mm-hmm. So the percentage is 50-50.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? The fact is that most people who have crossbows don't understand crossbows. They thought they are like guns, but they can mm-hmm. use it in bow season. That increased the significant kill of the animal. Unfortunately, most of them are wounded and just died.
Mm-hmm.
But it's true if we, in the vertical bow, it's the same thing. Because see, remember, when bow hunting or any hunting, one thing, which is sad to say, most people are, this is all self-discipline. When nobody is watching, how many people actually discipline themselves? They say, this is more than I can shoot. I will just let go.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people say, oh, I won't put a 35-yard mm-hmm. shot and somebody hold a vertical bow and deer is 42 yards from him. If nobody's watching and say, worst case scenario, I lost an arrow, how many would have fired?
Mm-hmm. That's so fair.
I mean, I understand. That is a fantastic good ethical argument. There's a fantastic what people can or cannot do. Just like in your age, which is way back when I'm 30-something, you don't have time. You literally do. I mean, wait until your daughter go to football, baseball, rehearse a choir, whatever, or ballet.
Whatever, you know exactly what I mean. Hopefully, in a perfect world, she gets into archery and she comes scouting with me in the spring and we go out hunting together in the fall.
Or you can do one of my good buddy, one of my very old friends who is a hoy dealer. Both mm-hmm. her daughters went to Princeton University full ride on an archery scholarship.
That's amazing.
Yes,
that's amazing.
Just told me? Princeton? Archery scholarship? You know how much it cost? Full ride on an archery? Yes!
Now,
like, you know, that's like $200,000. No, actually, it's more like It's more like a $500,000 now for both daughters.
Yeah, I don't doubt it. I don't doubt it. Now let me ask you this question. Yes. Do you think crossbows make it easier for people to take more risk in the woods?
No, like, for example, the result is the same. It only gives you the appearance of that, but at the end of the day, I would tell you based on my experience, okay? Most crossbow people do not know how to maintain their crossbow. Mm-hmm. In other words, when they make a shot, the equipment will only give you a slight edge. Yes, they will make mistakes, but most people don't understand high-speed crossbow, especially with the wrong broadhead, do not shoot well.
Yeah, I found that out this year with a semi-fast compound bow, you know?
And then, like, in other words, but you know one thing that's good for the entire archery industry and for most people, you actually got to, I mean, just like we discussed, you know what the most underused equipment on this planet that people buy the most in archery?
In archery. Unused the most?
Mm-hmm.
God. I feel like I should know that.
The more I say it to you, you're absolutely, like, how can I not know that?
I feel like I got a rangefinder. It can't be the rangefinder,
no,
right?
Broadheads.
Really?
Yes.
Well, think about how much, because they're only shot at animals.
Average person bought.
You only shoot them at an animal. That's it.
I understand that. But think about how many people bought brand new broadhead every year and how many they usually bought.
Me, at least three, sometimes six. Because I say, okay, well, what if I shoot three deer?
Right. And then how many you actually make contact with the animal and killed?
I've bought 12 different broadheads. No, I've bought four different types of broadheads, but I've bought 12 individual broadheads over the last three seasons, and I've hit three or four deer.
Okay, so how many, what's your percentage of actual use?
25%.
Okay, that's very high. You know how many people go hunt three times a year, three to 2 days a time, six times, and not shoot any?
A lot.
The success rate of Illinois is less than 8%, based on known, written down statistics.
That's fair. I mean, pretty much what they're essentially doing is taking the number of licenses sold and the number of people who kill
deer. No. And we're talking deer now, going to all the state park, you're going sign in, and how many mm-hmm. take a deer, how many hours you cut. Because, see, okay, like when I had all the fabrics, I had to put in sign in, sign out, deer killed. That's statistic.
We don't have that by us. All of the states that I hunt, if it's public land, you just go on and hunt it. There's no books.
Yeah,
or
because
that
is a good data. So you can see how many people spend how many hours, how many people actually use and hunt, what's the harvest rate.
Okay.
I mean, on the places that I know of, it's under 8%.
All right. So let's take a redirect here. Not really redirect, but as far as crossbows are concerned, mm-hmm. what would you say the most common problem people call with, let's say within the first month, within 1 month of a hunting season, what is the most common problem you have, but that's the easiest to solve if they had done it a little bit sooner?
No, that's not. It's not a sooner or later matter. It's made of understanding.
Okay.
I got so many customers who call me, just bought a brand new crossbow. They get to shoot it. Oh, I can do 100 yards within 2 inches. I can do 120 yards within 2 inches. Oh, I use your arrow. It's wind blowing. I do 2 inches in 130 yards. Great.
Now put a broadhead on. Is that where you were going with that?
Yeah. You know, I got a guy call me. I don't know why you didn't shoot well. What are you shooting? What are you shooting with? We're not talking in arrow range. We're talking guys using normal blazers.
Well,
they're shooting
also,
freaking 150, 175 ring. Silver frame. What else? Iron wheel broadheads. Mm-hmm. You think they will fly well with crossbow?
Probably not. I'm gonna venture.
The only way they will fly well if they put feathers on it.
But Iron wheel has a vented broadhead now, don't they?
What's the matter? It's still big.
Okay.
It's 150. That thing is about this big.
Yeah. Now, it's really important. This is very, very, very important for people to understand, because there is one thing that a compound can do that you cannot do with just about any crossbow.
Mm-hmm.
When you have a compound and you put your field points on, you put your broadheads on, I personally like to paper tune. I paper tune all of my bows. There's some people who don't do that, and that's fine. Mm-hmm. Some people bear shaft tune, you know, they just shoot a bear shaft down range or whatever. However you choose to tune your bow, Compound bows have the ability to move your cams left and right, and they give you the ability to tune your bow to get your arrow to fly the way you want it to. Mm-hmm. You can't really do that with a crossbow. Granted, you have the rail on a crossbow, so you have a straight path. But if you shoot your broadhead and a field point, and your broadhead is hitting to 8 inches to the right of your field point, there's really nothing you can do to your crossbow to fix that.
Well, yes and no. You can. Actually, I make a system that can do that.
Really?
The thing you said, now, think about it. Some of the newer crossbow, like the 10 Point, the Raven, or the old Genin Devastator, they're all arrow rest-based crossbow. They're no rail.
Okay. If you have an arrow rest, that's a little bit of... Okay.
The same thing with Tech 15, but that's a little different story because it's even more complicated because it's upside down. So by doing so, in some cases, people don't understand crossbow. If you shoot a crossbow, you're pretty much guaranteed to be off spine and off note.
Really? Any crossbow? Any arrow?
Nearly
any crossbow?
All crossbows.
Now, are you saying that the spine is usually too weak, or the spine
and
is usually...
And also the note is not on the rest, because usually the arrow rest of your arrow is the tip of your rail.
Hold on a second. Back up for a second. I thought in one of our previous conversations that if you shoot a crossbow, I understand if you shoot a crossbow that's on an arrow rest, then you essentially want to follow the same rules as a compound bow, right?
Yes.
You want the
do a 90-degree turn.
Right, but you want the node to sit on the arrow rest. You want it all to line up beautiful. But all I thought when you shoot a crossbow off a rail that the node isn't important anymore. Is that not correct?
Because see, think about it. When you shoot a crossbow arrow, mm-hmm. what's the contact point of the arrow?
The whole thing.
Think with me, sorry, Steph. It's not the rail. It's the tip of the rail. Because the arrow flex. This point is the tip of the rail.
So at the moment that you shoot your crossbow and the string releases, the arrow flexes, and now that arrow only has two points of contact, the string and the edge of the rail that it's flexing around.
All right. You got it. That's your note.
Okay. Okay. So you don't want your bolt to be as small as possible. You want your bolt to be the length you need it to for your node to be where it belongs.
Yes, and 99% of all crossbow, because they try to keep the arrow in front of the foot stirrup, they make the arrow too short, so the node is actually behind that.
Okay. And would you find the node on a crossbow bolt the same way you would a compound arrow?
Absolutely, just they're
just
identical.
On a table until you find where it doesn't vibrate? Okay.
And then the one of the worst offender of this is Raven, especially on a 29X and so on. They are this far away from the arrow rest.
Now, is the Raven a bigger problem because the Raven is one of the fastest crossbows out there? Is that what?
No,
they're
not
them?
The fastest. The fastest is 10 Point.
Really?
The Raven, yeah, the other one is 515. The Raven is 500.
Wow, I didn't know that. I thought Raven was top dog right now.
No. I mean, Raven, after the 500 come out, they actually make a heavier arrow and go with the 460. It's the same as 500, except use a heavier arrow to slow the bow down and keep the bow not blow up.
I mean, to be honest with you, if I were a crossbow shooter, let's say I got hurt tomorrow and I can't shoot a compound, which, by the way, back to what we were talking about with the crossbows, I think they're phenomenal for older individuals like my dad who physically cannot shoot a compound bow anymore, or a younger kid first getting into hunting. I think a crossbow is a really good opportunity for them to get into hunting and not have to worry about form as much and all that stuff. Right?
But you know what? I thought of that long time ago when I was younger, but as mm-hmm. I get older, not the case.
Okay.
At the end of the day, think about it. A crossbow is a lot heavier than a vertical bow.
Mm-hmm.
And if you know your geometry, that means your pull geometry, mm-hmm. you can do easily with a tree saddle or on a normal tree stand. Mm-hmm. With a crossbow, your form are so restricted, and to shoulder that crossbow correctly or try to shoot behind a tree is close to impossible.
Oh, behind the tree, absolutely.
Not or similar at a bad angle. The crossbow would not do that like a regular bow would.
Okay.
And when you try to stalk with a crossbow, you know exactly what I mean.
Yeah, my cousin tried that. Actually, my cousin said it the opposite way. He preferred to stalk with a crossbow because he felt like the compound required too much movement. Which I don't know if personally I agree with that.
You know, or not, but that's crossbow, you can kneel and shoot a crossbow vertical with your stand.
Yeah.
But then you're talking to people using compound bow, not recurve.
Yeah.
Because if you're really stalking, the recurve guy always wins.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Well, because it's also, most of them are shooting instinctually. It's just, it's the moment it gets to your mouth, you're pretty much letting it go. So that it's.
But those guys practice. That this part of the of this part here is part of the shooting equation. You can't beat this part.
100%. It goes on between your ears, whether you're compound, crossbow, traditional firearm, muzzleloader, rifle, shotgun, doesn't matter. What goes on in between the ears is the biggest component to your success or your failure. 100%, without a doubt. Yeah. Now, where I was going with that was, let's say I get hurt tomorrow and I can never shoot a compound bow again. Mm-hmm. If I were to shoot a crossbow, I would probably go with a heavier arrow.
Some people don't, because of how much you know. This is where the biggest problem is. Just like, I would say, just like when I was shooting vertical bows, I love super fast arrows. I still do. But then in crossbow, my success rate and my distance and where I'm going to hunt, all those come into my equation of building. Just like if I'm going to hunt, say, the upper part of Miller Anderson, I'm going to have a 40-yard shot easy. Most probably, I would not bring my, what's the bow called? The 480 feet per second crossbow.
Okay.
I would not have bring that.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the distance and the climb and the walk, I would bring the Deathstalker.
Okay.
Because it's easier, it's lighter, and then I can hold the bow better on a tree stand. But then if I'm a local, like I'm going to my good buddy Troy's place, he got about 2,000 deer there. Mm-hmm. I'm going to bring my high power scalper crossbow with a 550 green arrows.
Sure.
I'm just going to knock them in front of me. Be done with it.
And now, my what's it called? The big thing for me is what I learned this year is while I love a fast arrow, and while I'm probably going to still continue to shoot it now that I've finally figured it out, it took way longer to really get it dialed in than I ever thought it would. Even after the conversations I had with you, even with the conversations I've had with you, all that stuff, I still thought it wasn't going to take as long as it did. Now, part of that was my string was stretching and the bow was changing as I was going. So one day it would be on, the next day it wouldn't be. But broadheads really caused an issue. And part of it is my fault, because I'm pretty much refusing to use mechanical broadheads. I don't want to use a mechanical. It's just my thing. If I were, I have like one or two that I'd be willing to use. We've talked about that before, but it's like, for me, it's the last option. If I'm about to go into season and I just can't get the bow to shoot right, and I could put a mechanical on and it shoots well, that's probably when I would do it. But
that's exactly what that's for.
But I will also say, after speaking with you and after speaking with the guys over at Tooth of the Arrow, and after getting my bow to the bow shop, and because I don't have a bow press here, unfortunately, but I got my bow to the shop. It turns out we needed to move a couple spacers around because the bow wasn't tuned properly. Once I got that bow tuned, the broadheads and the field points, they were hitting exactly where they needed to, 40, 50 yards, no problem. Now, here's an issue that I did have that makes absolutely no sense to me. None whatsoever. And like I said, I have to go get a new string today, so maybe this will fix the problem. 30, broadhead hits with field points. 40 yards, broadhead hits with field points. 50 yards, broadhead hits with field points. 20 yards, broadhead hits 3 inches low. It makes no sense to me.
No, you simply need the arrow flight path.
Do you think that the arrow hasn't recovered yet at the 20 yards, or is it, I'm sorry. That's not the right phrase. Do you think it's the initial planing of the broadhead that is causing it to hit low at 20 yards?
No, it's your center point of your arrow with your bow. So the arrow is actually flying like this.
Interesting. So what do I do?
You know, the good thing is that the arrow all dive and recover the same.
Mm-hmm. They do. Because again, field point, whatever.
Now, but that also depends on, remember, you're not dealing with a raw shaft. You're dealing with, quote-unquote, a vein on it. Mm-hmm. Other ring recovers in the speed. Remember, speed rotation all come into play.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe at 20 yards, you got a little bit of magnetic effect. It may move a little bit low, and then it starts to move high, and then plane out. Because remember, you're not dealing with veins. Because if you're just dealing with feather, I'll guarantee the arrow just keep dripping. The moment you deal with blazer, you'll do that. But the moment you put wings on an arrow in a high-speed rotation, a lot of weird things happen. And you have to find out. The worst part is that you find out on your bow, with your draw length, with your broadhead, with your arrow, with your combination, do not mean anybody have the same. Mm-hmm. That's the part that people say, Dodge, why can't you just give me a formula that works? Mm-hmm. I say, I can't. I really cannot. That works. You know, that was so important. You see, when I was teaching, I tell people, hey, Dodge, can't you give me a formula to work? I say the variables are so astronomically, and the combined equipment and the result of it is non-predictable.
Right.
And you need to adjust minor to get it to be the point that you desire, because every single small pieces will be so off, you don't know what to do with.
Right.
And I told you that.
Yeah, you did. You did. Listen, I'm not blaming you. I'm not blaming the product. I'm not blaming any. I'm blaming myself for being so thick-headed. But that makes sense now, because when we just went and shot the R100 in New Jersey, I was shooting very well the first day. Second day, mm-hmm. not as much. I was pretty tired, and the string had stretched, and I was trying to compensate for it by aiming high. It was a weird weekend, and I'm honestly I'm mentally drained from this string problem, because I've been trying to figure it out. I think I'm just going to replace it, but that's neither here nor there. What was weird was under 20 yards, I was hitting very low. Under 20 yards, I was hitting about 4 inches low with my field points, not just my broadheads. So I had to aim high. It was the weirdest thing. So I don't know if I need to I shoot the Garmin. So now in my head, now I got to go in and program 15 yards and 10 yards also on top of 20 and 30 and 40.
Yeah, but if you shoot 15 yards with that, you have a high chance of arrow explode on.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm talking more for, don't get me wrong. If I have a deer at 5 yards, I'm probably going to shoot at it. And hopefully it goes in far enough to kill it. But I'm referring more likely for target stuff. Because sometimes you go to the tacks and the R100s, and it's not uncommon for people to have a 4 yard shot.
You know, that 4 yard shot is dangerous because the arrow can explode on contact. Mm-hmm. I will tell you exactly. And one of my good, long time customer with me for over 15 years. He used to be an ex-ranger, okay?
Well, like Army Ranger?
Army Ranger. He shot an elk at 9 feet. The arrow bolt 3 exposed to 7 pieces.
That's what you were saying. I remember you telling me that.
No, this is not a joke. He shot a Scarpet Orion Extreme. So the arrow is flying at 460 feet per second. On arrow bolt 3, it broke in 7 pieces. So this is not a joke.
That's insane. Mm-hmm. What do you, Hunter? Oh, we have a visitor.
It sounds like, today, since we're talking about all the customer issue, I'll tell you all my fun story so you can share with you.
Okay.
I want to rephrase how important it is. It's the matching of the string to knock on crossbows.
Yes. You mean the style of knock or the size of the throat?
The size of the knock and the style of the crossbow with the string serving.
Okay, so just to clarify, you're talking about a half moon versus a flat back versus a fully contained knock. Okay.
The flat back, as your speed goes up, the flat back has one major issue. If you do not have down pressure on the string and the knot is not hit in the center, you have dry fire.
Is that because the string could slip off of the knock?
Slip under the knock.
Under the knock?
Because you need to understand, if the size of the string do not hit the center of the knock, the pressure is put off the arrow, so the arrow can tilt like this because you're hitting it. Imagine this is you're hitting low like this, or you're hitting high like this. So it's easier to hit high. So a lot of people using for the flat knocks, they like a larger string because you're hitting it like this, so the arrow is pushed down. Mm-hmm. If you use a smaller string, the arrow will be pushed up. See, this is not. If the arrow push up, the arrow go up like this.
Yes.
Or just end up like this.
And like we said, the arrow's flexing on release already. So there's already some flex going. So that's why, that makes sense. Yeah. 100%.
That's the reason for a flat knock. The larger the diameter string, the better off you are. Because you are pushing the center push above the arrow. Also, of course, the design of the rail depends on how far the knock, the arrow actually sink between. So in most cases, you want to shoot at least 52% above from the center. That means on the whole arrow, say it's 3,000. Okay, you want to be hitting about 160,000 to 165,000 of the entire arrow shaft surface.
Okay.
Now the Mundak, there's another problem. With the Mundak, you always have issues like if you do not use the right string, how much the nut sink and above of the rail. So if the nut is hitting the top of the Mundak, the arrow is thick, so the arrow will tilt down. Mm-hmm. So if you hit the string is really thin, and the arrow end up the high, you hit the lower part of the Mundak, your arrow will go like this. Because of V shape, you hit the lower part of V, you're causing it to do this.
So in that case, do you want a wider string or a thinner string?
You need the string that matches with the design.
And not all half moons are made the same?
No, because like a mission. Mission is not a temp, it's not a half one. Mission is a flat with lip. Mission is a nuts are flat with two lips on the side, like this.
Okay. Yep.
So the reason for that, because mission string hit a little bit on the low side, not on the high side. Because if they got moon on it, the arrow would dig the arrow.
Right.
So that's the reason even mission and from the mission MXP, which is based on the 155,000 to say there's one XL and light, that's using 165,000. So the entire design of the arrow changed.
Okay.
Now, that said, a lot of people don't understand when you start shooting crossbow, there was two major, major important points. Say you decided to go in a foot, I mean, I talk about moon and half and flat. Now let's go into the more secure, because see, as you go higher and higher speed, the misloading of an arrow and the full positive connection of an arrow become more and more critical. Because with a flat nine, you say you don't care. You can just push it in whatever way you want it. It's making full contact, the nine is flat. That is if you do not understand the arrow have a spine, the arrow flexes. And if you do that, then it's all screwed up. Right. That's the biggest issue.
So now, would you recommend then that whatever is somebody, and these days, I'm pretty sure every crossbow you buy comes with bolts, right? Whether it's three or six or however many. So would you recommend whatever the crossbow comes with is the knock you stick with? Like the style, it doesn't have to be their knock, but at least their style?
Not in this case. Okay. Because a lot of crossbow, whatever is available to the dealer at the cheapest price.
Okay.
In my personal opinion, okay, you should always shoot the knock that fully contained with the string to be safe. Mm-hmm. In other words, you want a perfect connection between the knock and the string. Now, this is where everybody sort of screwed up on all the crossbows, because that's actually is two opposite conditions. If you have crossbow, it's a full rail. Compared to a false crossbow that's half rail or arrowless crossbow, the specification of the knock with the string is exactly opposite.
Repeat that.
If you got a crossbow that's full railed compared to a crossbow that's half railed or with an arrowless, the requirement of the knock and the string is exactly opposite.
Can you give an example?
Okay. For example, you're shooting, a scorpion. Mm-hmm. And the string is 142,000. You want a knock that's 145,000. That means there's 2,000 or 3,000 movement in it. Mm-hmm. Why? Because you've got a full rail. That means as the arrow travels down, the imperfection of the cam and the limbs can cause the string to do this.
Yes, I do remember us talking about this. Yes.
So if your knock is not allowed the string to move, the arrow start riding the rail from side to side.
Okay. That makes sense. It needs to free flow so the string can move without affecting the motion of the arrow.
Now you go into a full half rail or a no rail in an arrow rest based crossbow. It's like a vertical bow now. The only contact point that's consistent is a knock that stick to the string. Because unlike a Tech 15, you don't have a D-loop. With the D-loop, it doesn't matter because the knot is going to maintain with the string no matter what. Mm-hmm. But the case of like the Raven or like the Scorpion Deathstalker, which is half rail, or like the Jennings Devastator or some of the Tampon Crossbow, that's no rail. Your knot must make full contact with the string to the point that it does not move. So in other words, the knot need to behave like it was a string looped.
Okay.
Otherwise, your consistency will not be there. So, in other words, if you're shooting a, you're buying, say, the UNAC for or raven, then there's 135,000. Your string should be 138,000. So you're pushing 3,000 onto the string.
Okay, so the string needs to be a little bit bigger than the knock in that case.
And you cannot be oversized, because then you either the string gift and become to deform and change shape, or your knot is overstretched to the point it can be cracked at low temperature.
Okay.
Those are the two biggest factors. Now Let me show you another one. So what happened to the people like the Raven R18 or the R500? The four cycles were so strong, it will actually deform the polycarbonate knock. That's the same thing with the 10.505. You put a normal polycarbonate, I put a D3 on it and let it shoot, the entire knock prop up to two shots will be like this. The string no longer clicks.
Mm.
We actually make a whole series of metal knock. The word plus. Yes. The word plus means that like D is 165,000 plus.
Yes. I don't think it's on. I have the mat in front of me. But the mat is just for the lighted knocks that I have here. But I do remember seeing those metal knocks.
Right. The good thing of metal knocks is that they still have an opening. But then the opening and the knock had to match now. Because remember, it is not made of 781. It's made of 6665.
Is that stronger?
No, it's a lot softer.
Okay.
Right. Because when I first used the 77.5, it literally cut the surfing. The force is too violent. The speed, the applying of the force is too short.
I do remember that. That was, you talked about that in the training videos.
Right. So what happens? I move to a soft metal and then I have to soft anodize it.
Okay.
So that's for color. So the anodize will flick off, but it does not damage the surfing. Okay. Now the problem happened. Did metal give or open like plastic polycarbonate? It does not.
Mm-mm.
So the opening of the knot, like this part, doesn't exist. So The only thing that will give is a surfing.
Right. So it's got to be the right size.
So in other words, in the case of the latest Raven string, they finally serve it with really tight serving. So the give is less. So I make the U plus.
Mm-hmm.
But then it does not work. Because the serving is so tight, I have to -5,2,500 on each side to make the opening damage bigger. So that just that portion, because the string is so tight, now you've got a perfect fit. Mm-hmm. That's the reason it's called U+5.
Okay.
+5 means that it's 5,000 bigger. Isn't that something? And crossbow?
Yeah.
But then...
Go ahead.
But then this is only one portion of the equipment's equation. At the end of the day, it's still an archery equipment. You're still dealing with an arrow, with vanes, with a broadhead, and a shaft. Mm-hmm. Everything we talk about in the archery series applies in crossbow.
Now, would you say on a crossbow, everything we talked about in the arrow science series, does it matter more, less, or the same?
Anything past 380 feet per second, it matters more. Because Everything is faster, more violent,
and the
compression of time.
Does the size of the bolt that you're shooting make it a little bit more forgiving? But what I mean by that is, when we're talking compound bows, we said 280 feet or more, you may or may not start to see some problems. 290 feet or more, you're definitely going to see some minor problems, and 300 feet or more, you're going to see a lot. Where 310 and above, aerodynamics take over without a doubt. But we're saying with that's compound. Now we're saying with crossbow, 380, 390, right? 30.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So relatively, it's somewhat the same, but the bolt gives you a little about 50 more feet per second to work with before it gets a little like crazy.
Now let's sit back and talk about this. What's the average length of an arrow with this vertical bolt?
I mean, if the average shooter is 28 inches, I'm going to say a 28 and a half or a 28 and a half. I'll say a 28 and a half inch arrow shaft is
correct.
Is average.
What's the average length of a crossbow arrow?
16 and a half inches.
No, 20.
Really? Okay.
In other words, and not to mention an average arrow size theoretically is about 246 or about two of the ID or the OD of the shaft of 250 or 170,000.
Yeah,
the average OD of a crossbow is 345,000.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big difference in OD. That's a big difference in recovery.
And
not just that, it's half the length. is 20, 22, 18. And the vertical bow is your 27 to 32.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So there's more. So there's, like we've talked about in the past, it's never just one factor that makes or breaks a system. Every part of the system is a factor that goes into whether it's going to be successful or not. And let's just point out here that any arrow can be effective on your bow, whether you want to shoot a heavy arrow or a light arrow or a high FOC or balanced or arrow concept or a regular build. Any arrow you shoot can be effective. It's just how much are you willing to work and how much time are you willing to put into your practice and your building to make it work for you.
What are you willing to sacrifice?
Right. In my case,
that's no perfect.
In my case, it's time. It's time and sanity.
Exactly. Because it's like somebody, they say, I need FOC, FOC. Okay, they put 175 grain. Yes, the arrow fly like noodles. They're happy with that 25-yard shot.
Mm-hmm.
And they won't shoot anything close. That's totally fine. You need to understand what that equipment will do for you.
Mm-hmm.
But then, like some of my customers, they absolutely insist, if I can't do that 110-yard shot with a crossbow in 20 miles per hour, it's not good enough.
Mm-hmm. Well, some people have to make those shots. If people are hunting out west, those are very, very realistic shots.
I remember this incident. The cardiac surgeon out of Pennsylvania called Scott at Jim and then called me. He ended up buying the bow from Jim and get the arrow from me. And sure enough, the freaking deer showed up 95 yards across the field from where he shot. He looked at it and put it on the standing bag and pulled it and dropped it. Of course, he called Jim and talked for 2 hours. He called me for about half an hour, explaining how wonderful everything is. Because he, as a cardio surgeon, how many days you really got off a year?
I don't know. I know some doctors who are home a lot.
I know, but those are not the good ones. The good ones have never have time.
Okay.
Well, and
I guess
he was so happy.
Anything. I guess if you're good at anything, you never have time.
You got it. Just like I got my good buddy, what's his name? Josh, out of North Carolina. He's a plumber. He was never free.
Right. Hey, listen, it's, you know, when people's pipes go down, you got to go to the bathroom. You got to be able to flush the toilet. You got to be able to have running water, right? Like just not too long ago, we had a power outage here. We don't have a generator. Everything in our house runs off electric. The heat runs off electric. The air conditioner runs off electric. Everything runs off electric. The only thing that doesn't run off electric is our fireplace that doesn't work. So when we lose power, we lose internet, which means we have no service because we don't have cell service in our house unless we're connected to Wi-Fi. We don't have TV. We don't have running water because our well runs off a pump. We have nothing without power. And
well, one of these things, when we're off-grid, we will talk. I'll help you to design a system. They will give you 2 days of power for under 10 grand.
Really? My wife will love that one.
Yeah, back in 2019, I put a full solar system above my house. The battery alone would cost me $135,000, but now I think I can do the whole thing for about $10,000 to $15,000.
Side note, what we need to sit down and talk about is I remember you talking about and then after this I actually got to go. Next time we could, like today we focused on crossbows for the most part. Next week we could talk about common compound issues that arise right as season is about to start.
Yeah, I just fixed three guys' compound bow. The father and son is one of them, okay. And then the other guy. I mean, it's funny. The father with the son come back and he put a bow like this. I say, when did you buy the bow? 2 years ago. What's your age now? 16 and a half. So you bought the bow at 14 and now you're 16. How much have you grown? 9 inches.
A lot.
Oh, his bow was set up at 26 and he's taking a 30-inch draw.
That's amazing.
You know, so, those kids from 14 to 16, they grow like weeds.
Oh, like weeds. You ain't kidding, man. You ain't kidding. I see it as a teacher. The kids go home for summer. They come home. It's like your voice has dropped. You're 6 inches taller. You have muscle tone. What in the world happened? And what have you done with little Johnny from sixth grade? But when I remember you talking about a little contraption that you made. You were talking about it with Cameron Durr, where you basically made a deer winch that can go on a power drill and that you can, okay. I hunt alone. Everywhere I hunt is rocky. I'm not going to be able to bring a freaking deer cart into the woods. We're going to have to sit down and chat about getting one of those.
You know,
for sure.
I never believe it. I make it for myself. I end up buying a dozen of it.
Okay. You still have them?
I still have two left.
Okay.
Actually, Tulip, yeah. Because the last can I sold, my friend got one. His brother's birthday. He gave him one, and then the other guy come by. Then his father-in-law. He bought one for Christmas, because everybody will use it, need one.
Yeah,
which is sort of funny, especially when you are. When you're alone, I mean, like where I hunt, if you've seen the picture on my Facebook page, mm-hmm. I shot out of Miller Anderson, topside, north side. The more you shot the deer, you strike down 4 stories. No, I'm not joking. It's strike down 4. I mean, I will tell you this, but I shot a 97 point, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I go down there and grab the freaking deer. I pulled it halfway through. I slipped. I rolled down with the deer with a horn next to my chest. When I go down there, I do this.
Oh my God.
Then I say, I'm not doing this shit anymore. I just go home. And then I got so mad with myself. That night, I think I need to get the deer. So I go back out and I can't find it. The next morning, I look at the deer, freaking like all eat up because the coyote take a number on it. I go down there. I just cut the head off because the freaking gut is all over the place. I mean, we're mm-hmm. talking every single damn thing.
Yeah.
I was so mad with myself because, and that's the time that I say, you know what? I need to get a winch. Because I go back that night. I bought a strum strings and pulley.
Mm-hmm.
I can't find it.
Mm-hmm.
I literally cannot find it.
And especially if you hunt alone. Like, guys, don't get me wrong. Like, if you shoot, like, a 120-pound deer, you gut it, maybe now it's 90, 85 pounds, 95 pounds, something like that, I'll throw the freaking thing over my back and walk out with the deer. Don't get me wrong.
No, that thing is over 170.
But that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. If you shoot a 200-pound deer, 190-pound deer, and you gut it, you're still not taking them out. You know what I mean? Now, don't get me wrong. Okay, let me back up. I'm out of shape. I am getting old. I'm fat. I am not in the shape I was 5 years ago. I'll admit it. So
you're gonna love this one. I was shooting in the church. That was in downtown Chicago. It was just after sun, just about 5 minutes after sundown. This big doe showed up. I shot through the heart. Didn't freaking turn around. I expected to drop. It didn't drop. You walk all the way freaking and drop his head down about 7 foot into the stream. Mm-hmm. And his head is inside the stream. Okay? I come down my tree lounge, go there, find the deer, pull the head up. Can't do anything. I call my good buddy Jim Moore. I said, can we drag this out? The water is about this deep. Okay? We're mm-hmm. talking 8-inch water.
Mm-hmm.
Two of us can't move the deer.
That's what I'm saying.
No. Two of us can move a 150-pound deer.
What, was it stuck?
No, it's not. Because it stuck its head in the water, the entire lung is filled with water.
Oh, my goodness.
So I go back to my car. I got the winch. I winch the entire deer off into the flat area. The moment I do this, I get washed.
Well, there you go. You know what, then? It washed out the insides for you. Saved you a step.
You know, luckily it was cold, but inside with all the stream water and so on, you actually can rot a lot faster. I just winch it.
Well, there's bacteria.
So you can see, I mean, I just do this. I think I put my throat knife in and then just like, cut. The more I do this, possibly.
Yeah, it's like free flowing. So
that tells you how important, because there's no way I would have winched it up. That thing, I think, is closer to 280 pounds. People don't understand. A lung full of water on a deer, you literally add a third to the weight of the deer. I cannot believe it was that heavy.
Water's heavy. Water's heavy.
I know. I'm just like, whoa, this is something. Yeah. All right, well, that's a good one for the day. And we'll talk again next week.
That's a good place to wrap up. I thank you again for joining us. It's always a great time getting together. I'm getting so fascinated with the science of arrows and just learning about gear. Like, I used to be a gearhead. I wanted the best things. Now I want to learn how things work so I could get the best thing for me. And I'm hoping that the listeners are getting some of that value out of this as well. So guys, as always, if you like what you heard today, drop on down below, leave us a 5-star review. If you're on Apple Podcasts, you can go ahead and leave a written 5-star review. That goes a really long way at helping us out. Scroll all the way to the bottom there of the description. There's going to be a little link over there for FireKnock. If you head on over to FireKnock's website, they have everything you need. Everything you need for arrow components to build arrows, whether you want to build arrow concept or not, anything you need is there. If you have any questions, especially when it comes to crossbows, like we were talking about today, there are so many different options and different combinations that may or may not work for you. Give George a call. Shoot him an email. He's really friendly and he's very easy to talk to, and he'll answer your questions. And best part is he likes to get off the phone as quickly as he gets on sometimes. So you'll get the answers you need, and then you'll be able to go on with your business. Also, along with those links, we have some other links to other supporters of the channel. Specifically, we have a 10% discount code for you from the Nested Tree Stand system. You could go ahead and click that link, and when you get there at checkout, use code UT10 to save yourself 10% on your entire order. And it also goes a long way at helping the podcast out too. So until next time, thank you for joining us. And remember, success is just a commitment away. Have a great week.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Where's your playlist taking you? Down the highway? To the mountains? Or just into daydream mode while you're stuck in traffic? With over 4,000 hotels worldwide, Best Western is there to help you make the most of your getaway. Wherever that is. Because the only thing better than a great playlist is a great trip. Life's the trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.